This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Weathers inbounder.
Wow, that was a game. The men may have produced, the Maryland men that is, the best finish to a game in either of the tournaments, the men's and the women's tournament. But last night in College Park, the game of March so far, Maryland outlasted Alabama in double overtime, 111-108. It was the second highest scoring NCAA tournament game of all time. On the other end, as in the Crimson Tide end, Sarah Ashley Barker scored 45 points, Denton. 45. She was unstoppable. She was 17 of 25 from the floor. And that was 5 points short of the all-time individual scoring mark in NCAA tournament play. If the game had gone to a third overtime, she probably would have set the mark. Now, she also turned it over 11 times in the game. Maryland off to the Sweet 16. This is the first time, and this is surprising to me, and maybe it shouldn't be. This is the first time during Brenda Freeze's run at Maryland, where the Maryland men and the Maryland women have both been in the Sweet 16 at the same time. You know, she arrived at Maryland the year after Maryland won the national championship on the men's side, and then a few years later in 2006, she snagged an NCAA title in College Park. What a run, though, Brenda Freeze has had. She's going to join us in 20 minutes on the show. 23rd year at Maryland, and she's in the Sweet 16 for the 12th time. It would have been the 13th time, more likely than not, if not for COVID, because the Terps were going to be a very high seed in 2020 in the tournament. They get South Carolina. They get Dawn Staley and South Carolina next on Friday in the Sweet 16. Hell of a game. I was watching this game. They fouled this Ashley Barker at the end of the first overtime on a three-point attempt, up three, and she knocked down all three free throws to extend the game. There were a couple of moments in which I thought Maryland had the game wrapped up, but Bama led by 17 in the third quarter of the game. Hell of a basketball game last night. I wanted to read something that I got yesterday, and we didn't have time to read it yesterday, and this is off the beaten path sports-wise. It comes from Will. Will writes, "Kevin, I'm a new listener to your show, and I enjoy just about every episode." Well, thank you, Will. "I understand that your focus on D.C. is on D.C. area sports, especially the Skins, Maryland basketball, etc. I grew up in wrestling in Northern Virginia, and I felt like this weekend's NCAA championship deserved mention, even though it's not about the D.C. area or football or basketball. I did want to follow up with a question at the end that I think is an interesting question." But he writes, "Wyatt Hendrickson from Oklahoma State at 285 pounds upset Gable Stevenson from Minnesota for the NCAA heavyweight championship. Many in the wrestling community believe that this is the greatest upset in NCAA history. Wyatt Hendrickson beating Gable Stevenson might be the greatest upset in NCAA wrestling history. Stevenson was practically untouchable. An Olympic gold medalist in the 2020 Tokyo Games, multiple-time NCAA champion, and widely considered one of the most dominant heavyweights of all time. Hendrickson, while incredibly talented, wasn't expected to dethrone someone of Stevenson's caliber, especially after Gable came out of retirement with all of the hype surrounding him. The fact that Hendrickson not only held his ground but won against someone many saw as unbeatable completely flipped the script. It wasn't just an upset. It was a seismic moment that will be talked about for years to come. Anyways, I had to bring it up and see what you think is the greatest NCAA upset of all time. I'm guessing none on your list will include beating an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling. Ha ha. Cheers, Will. You know, I actually on Saturday saw the video of the end of this. It went viral. Did you see it, Denton?
Of course I did. Gable Stevenson was at one point signed to the WWE, one of your favorite entities.
Okay. I've never heard of either name. Okay. I know Trey Hendrickson. I certainly know of a few Stevensons over the years, but I was unfamiliar with either one of these two gentlemen. But the video went viral on social media over the weekend, and it was an exciting call. It was a dramatic call. And I did, you know, a tiny bit of research. Will provided much more to see the significance of what I was watching and understood that. And I actually made a note to myself, because I put a lot of notes into my phone as I'm just walking around or watching things or hearing things, that this would be a good what do you got at some point. And then I got this note from Will. Will, I could never, ever be able to understand, other than from what you've described and others have described and written about, where this would rank among the all-time NCAA upsets. I know football and basketball, and that's about it. I mean, when it comes to college sports, I am just your typical American sports fan. I watch college football, and I watch college basketball. You know, the last couple of years, I've probably watched more women's college basketball than I've ever watched before. Horrible injury last night, Juju Watkins getting injured for USC, tearing her ACL. Crushing moment for the women's tournament for her. By the way, she was hanging out with Jaden Daniels over the weekend, wasn't she, at some game?
Jaden Daniels went to her game.
He went to her first-round game?
He went to her first-round game. He also was present last night at the second-round game.
Oh, he was at the game last night.
He was. Hey, they're both from Southern California.
Are they dating? Do they know each other? Are they friends? I don't know anything about the relationship. I thought somebody wrote that they were cousins.
Somebody did write that they were cousins, but there's been nothing that has been proven to back up the idea that they are cousins.
Okay.
I mean, if there is something there, good for them. That's an athletic couple, I'll tell you that. Like, that's two high-level athletes.
Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, it does help when the husband and the wife are both athletes. The kids are typically in pretty good shape. Anyway, back to the wrestling thing. And that was a blow to the tournament and to Juju Watkins, who was obviously the star of women's basketball this year. So I watched the video. Obviously, people in that sport understand the magnitude of this upset. Like, this was not supposed to happen. No chance. This was, you know, this was Clay over Liston. This was Ollie over George Foreman, who passed away over the weekend. I'll be talking to Tom about that today on my podcast. Tom's a Hall of Fame boxing writer and knew George pretty well over the years. This was, you know, Douglas over Tyson, you know, is essentially what people are saying about this upset. For me, when it comes to college upsets, the greatest college upsets of all time, I start, I think, with NC State beating Houston in the 1983 NCAA tournament final. Although it wasn't the biggest point spread upset by a long shot, Houston was only an 8-point favorite in that final, in part because NC State was a team capable of really slowing the pace, and there was no shot clock, you know, back then. Man, you know, for those of you that don't ever remember college basketball without a shot clock, I don't think we realized it when we were watching it at the time, but it would be absolutely impossible to ever go back. Imagine turning on a basketball game that's majorly hyped, like, I'll give you an example, the 1982 ACC tournament final between number one North Carolina, or number one Virginia, number two North Carolina. Ralph Sampson's Virginia team, North Carolina with Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins and James Worthy. And Dean Smith decides in a game that's like 6-5 in the first half to pull the ball out and hold it for the rest of the half. I'm just going to tell you, Denton, there was something about watching that was dramatic in watching it back then. You could never go back to that. It would be horrible. But they literally held the ball. The score ended up being, I forget what that final score was, 41-40, something like that was the final score. That happened, though, all the time. You know, in Carolina's case, Dean Smith was the master of the four-corner offense and of holding the ball. Phil Ford was one of the great players to ever play in the ACC, but one of the reasons he's considered to be one of the greatest players to ever play in the ACC is he was the master of the four-corner delay offense. Of course, their four-corner offense also became an offense that they scored out of on a lot of occasions. But I would say that NC State over Houston, maybe even more so than Villanova over Georgetown. Many have pointed this out over the years, and I agree with it. That was their third meeting. Villanova had no fear of Georgetown because they were in their conference. They had played them. They knew what to expect. Phi Slamma Jamma going into that 83 title game was one of the highest flying, most athletic, seemingly unbeatable teams. And really, most people thought that the final had happened on Saturday night in the Final Four when they beat Louisville in the semifinals in an incredible game, one of the great Final Four games of all time. And that it was just, you know, a matter of, you know, a couple of hours, and Guy Lewis, who was the head coach of Houston, along with Clyde Drexler and a very young Hakeem Olajuwon, who at that point was actually called Akeem, A-K-E-E-M, Olajuwon, and Larry Mischow, and that group would wipe the floor with NC State, and it didn't happen. You know, the irony of that game, when you go back and you watch that game, is that NC State didn't slow it down. They went right at Houston, right out of the gate. They went at them, and they had an 8-point halftime lead. It was 33-25, I think, was the halftime score. You know, that's not a high-scoring game, but they went right at Houston, and they had an 8-point lead. The key in that game was Clyde Drexler picking up his fourth foul, Denton, in the first half. They put Clyde Drexler back into the game as NC State took a lead with three fouls, and he got called for a charge, charging into Terry Gannon, yes, the ABC ESPN play-by-play analyst guy over the years for lots of different sports. And, you know, if you ever want to go back and look at that play, Gannon actually bear hugs Clyde Drexler and kind of pulls him to the ground, but they called it an offensive foul. Coaches now don't keep guys in the game in the first half once they pick up their second foul. And Guy Lewis put Clyde Drexler back into the game in the first half with three fouls, and he got his fourth foul in the first half. I would bet you that over the last 30 years of basketball, you can't find an example of somebody having four fouls in the first half of a basketball game, college basketball game. There's no way a coach would have a player in the game with three fouls. I guess it's possible that some deep down off the bench guy comes in for defensive purposes or whatever and gets super aggressive and picks up four fouls and the coach isn't concerned about sitting him and foul trouble for that player, but not a starter. Not a starter, right?
Right. Although we did see in a couple of the conference tournaments, there were some people that kept their guys in with four fouls when they shouldn't have, and they
in the second half.
In the second half, yeah, not the first half, but in the second half.
Yeah, that. But in the, you know, I don't know when it became like the thing to do in college basketball, because I don't think it was the thing to do in the 80s to pull a player with the second foul. It seems to me that the majority, the mass majority of college coaches, if one of their starters, one of their key players anyway, gets a second foul in the first half, they pull them. Now, if there's a compelling reason because the game's getting away from them, they'll put them back in maybe, you know, and risk the third foul. But there's no chance. I haven't seen it in decades where a coach has kept a player in the game, a key player in the game in the first half with three fouls.
Let's keep it that way, unless Todd Golden wants to do that on Thursday against Maryland.
Yeah. We'll let him keep a couple of his key players
in. Like, keep Clayton in there if he got a fourth foul in the first half. You know, just get him out of the game early.
Yeah. So yesterday, switching subjects, would you like to add anything else to the all-time college upset conversation?
I mean, I thought it was awesome. I thought the call was great. I am stunned and also a little upset that you spent 8 to 10 minutes on this when I've been trying to get you to talk wrestling for 3 years, but it's fine.
Wait, you're not. This is real wrestling, though.
So is WWE, to an extent, kind of. Wink, wink.
Okay.
I mean, Gable Steveson was signed to WWE, and he decided to come back to Minnesota just to lose. So, you know, he couldn't cut it in the WWE. It just is what it is.
Did you know the significance of this upset?
Yeah. I mean, I know that Gable Steveson's one of the best. I mean, he's an Olympic gold medalist. Yeah. So I knew how good he was, and I had never heard of Wyatt Hendrickson before. So him upsetting, literally didn't matter who it was, anybody upsetting Gable Steveson was going to be a massive deal.
All right. Really cool video and call of it. For those that haven't seen it, just, you know, just search heavyweight college championship wrestling upset. Switching subjects real quickly. First of all, let me just mention Brenda Freeze coming up in about 10 minutes. Kevin Willard will join us at 11:25 this morning from San Francisco. The Terps getting ready for their Sweet 16 game Thursday night against Florida. We will certainly talk to Kevin about the game on Sunday against Colorado State and about his future. So 11:25 for Kevin Willard coming up. We've got other people scheduled on the show today as well. John Fanta from Fox will join us at 11. We'll talk tournament with John. And I think we'll have Robbie Hummel, who was on the call for the Terps game Sunday in Seattle, on the show in the 12 o'clock hour. Yesterday was pro day for Cam Ward at Miami. And people were going nuts over Cam Ward's performance. He was slinging it all over the field. The conversation about his leadership on the field, and all of a sudden now it appears as if he is an absolute slam dunk to go number one overall to Tennessee. You know, I don't know why the Titans, if they like Cam Ward, would ever think about trading that pick. They don't have a quarterback. You have to have one. Cam Ward, from my standpoint, we've been talking about Cam Ward all year long. To me, he has been the number one quarterback in this draft, and I don't even think it's been close. And I think there's a chance he'll be a very good NFL quarterback. Like, there's a lot of Jaden in him. You know, I don't want to call anybody a poor man's Jaden Daniels at this point, because that almost implies that Jaden Daniels has established himself as a long time, you know, great player. But Cam Ward does a lot of what Jaden can do. The one thing I would just say about Cam Ward, I think there's times where he plays almost too casually, too nonchalantly. But, you know, some people said that about Jaden and his running style and when he would take off. And but Cam Ward really does it, and sometimes it gets him in big trouble with big losses and negative plays. But I love his talent, everything he did at the college level last year for sure the skills that he has are translatable in today's NFL. And that's some of the things that we talked about when we talked about Jaden coming out last year. But he apparently had one of the more impressive pro days. I mean, everybody talking about how impressive Cam Ward was. But I had somebody mention something to me, and this was, you know, during the season, and it was not on the show. It was a conversation about Jaden and what the team saw in him, you know, during the offseason that convinced everybody in the building that Jaden was the right guy. And it wasn't, you know, the interview necessarily in Indy, although that was their first face-to-face. It certainly wasn't his pro day. It was the things that really matter. How he played in actual games at LSU. And then what he was in the classroom. So when he was here with all of those other prospects, and they went to Topgolf, and there was all of this, you know, conversation about, you know, did he get enough attention, et cetera, stuff coming from his agent, the whole thing. They wanted to see him in the classroom. How does he process? How does he, you know, learn? These pro days in the Indy Combine, the physical parts of these things are so overrated. This is what, you know, I was told by somebody who, let's just say, is in the evaluation business. And what blew him away about Jaden was the games and then the person inside the classroom. But anyway, Cam Ward, a hell of a day apparently yesterday. Wouldn't you be surprised if Tennessee trades or doesn't take Cam Ward at this point?
I'd be stunned. They literally don't have anybody. They haven't been in any conversations for Russ or Aaron or whoever. It feels like Cam Ward is going number one overall.
I'll tell you what, you know, it was a benefit that the Giants went and beat Indianapolis, remember, late in the season, you know, with Drew Lock at quarterback, because they could have easily been in that position to select Cam Ward, and he could have been in the division. I mean, what do we know? We don't know anything. It's always a crapshoot with these picks, but Cam Ward's got real talent. It'll be interesting to watch him develop, and not much of a problem with him in the AFC, more likely than not in Tennessee. All right, Maryland's women's team is back in the Sweet 16. Brenda Fries has just had an amazing run. She'll join us next.
Weathers inbounder, finds Barker, trying to get up with it. Maryland survives!
What a basketball game last night at Xfinity Center. The Maryland men played in a game Sunday that produced the best ending in March so far. But the best game so far in March was played last night in College Park. The Maryland women rallying from down 17 in the third quarter to beat Alabama 111-108 in double overtime in the second highest scoring tournament game of all time. Brenda Fries has her Terps once again for the 12th time into the Sweet 16. Would have likely been 13th time had there been a tournament back in 2020. Maryland gets the top seed in the region, the defending national champ South Carolina, on Friday in Birmingham. Tip set for 5 p.m. on ESPN. Coach Brenda Fries joins me right now. You've been around a lot for a while now. You know, last night was your 860th game as a head coach in college. You've been involved, I'm sure, in a lot of memorable games. Where does last night rank?
Oh, well, first of all, I've got to say this weekend was Maryland madness at
yes.
the highest level for both teams. And you are right. You know, you kind of forget about the body of work and that many games. And clearly, you know, I've been really fortunate to be a part of some special wins, that overtime win and the national championship game, and but this one, you know, ranks right up there. I mean, it had all the feels, the emotions, the highs, the lows, being down 17 to coming back, and the double overtime, and just can't say enough about the resiliency of this group.
So let's go to that moment late in the third quarter, 3 minutes to go. You've got 13 minutes left in your season, and you're down by 17, 62-45. What was the message to your team?
You know, just encouragement, trying to, you know, give as much positivity, confidence that, you know, just we didn't have to do it all in one shot, and, you know, had to come down to getting a stop, then a score, and understanding just, you know, valuing the possessions, and, you know, credit to the resiliency of these kids. I mean, they fought, they battled, they believed, and, you know, just a huge turnaround in that game.
You know, you've done it before. I think you were down 18 to A&M a few years ago and came back. I actually, in watching the game, I thought the final 3 minutes of the quarter, third quarter, were so crucial because you guys cut the lead from 17 to 9. And actually, after a turnover, you had a shot. McLean had a shot, a really good look to cut the lead to 7. I thought that stretch, getting it under 10 before the fourth quarter started, was huge. Did you feel the same way?
I did. And, I mean, like you spoke of, I mean, so many important plays there with Mir McLean, you know, off of the bench. We had Amari DeBerry, who hadn't played at that point and came in the game and gave some impactful minutes. And that's what it's all about in March, you know, being ready when your number's called. And you know, they just strung together a lot of impactful plays.
I mean, as a coach, when you're down by 17, getting it to single digits is a psychological positive, you know, hurdle cleared, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. You got to, you know, find the motivation to get your kids to believe that they can still do it. And I'll say that about this locker room. I mean, they've trusted the process. They've stayed true to it, you know, especially when a lot of people have counted them out this season, especially throughout the injuries. And, you know, it was, you know, kind of fitting to be able to see, you know, them be able to turn it around.
Up 3, coach, at the end of the first overtime, they've got the ball. I think there's six point something seconds left. What was the strategy? I know you didn't want to foul Barker shooting the 3, but was there a plan to foul and put them on the line for 2 before anybody got into a shooting motion?
You know, there wasn't. We haven't been great at that. I think also, like, we haven't, you know, also we've had some issues at the free throw line, boxing out and those kind of things, and or inbounding the ball and you know, within that. So, you know, clearly we thought we could defend the 3, and the play unfolded as it did. And credit to Sarah and the game she had, and to be able to step up in that kind of environment and make all 3 free throws. But again, I thought our group didn't flinch. You know, they went into, you know, the second overtime and clearly believed that they could pull it out. But, you know, no team deserved to lose that game. That was a heavyweight fight and, you know, just 2 elite level teams going after it.
Yeah, some of the shot making back and forth at the end of the, you know, during the fourth quarter in the overtimes was amazing. We are talking to Coach Brenda Fries. The Terps are back into the Sweet 16 after just an incredible game in College Park last night. And before I get to the performances of a couple of your players, I've got to ask you about Sarah Ashley Barker going for 45 points, 5 short of the all-time record in an NCAA tournament game. Take us kind of inside some of the conversations you and your staff and the team were having trying to slow her down.
Well, first of all, we had our best defender on her with Mir McLean. You know, Mir actually made her have to work for those 45 points. So those were not an easy 45 points. So to tell you, you know, what that looked like. But, you know, we even, you know, started, you know, when doubling. She had the hot hand, I mean, we started to double and try to get the ball out of her hands, and still had a really hard time because she's just that good. I mean, you saw her, will to win and her competitive spirit to be able to lead her team on, and really, really talented player and difficult matchup.
Yeah, there were a couple times I'm like, I could see you're running double teams at her, and they're still, she was making plays. I was actually going to ask you, is it ridiculous to say, you know, Sarah Ashley Barker went for 45, but she also turned the ball over 11 times?
Yeah, she did. She did. And you know, having those turnovers were, you know, possessions for us to be able to go down and get shots at the basket. So, you know, you kind of pick your poison a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, we were able to do some things defensively to be able to force those 11 turnovers that were really helpful.
I mean, it was a team effort overall. I mean, you had some really good defensive plays when you needed them in the comeback. But Sellers and Tibiasu, clutch performances by both. What makes them so good in moments like last night?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, your guard play has to show up. And yeah, like you talked about, those two, Kaylee, Michael, I mean, massive plays. And you saw the confidence level. They wanted the big moments, you know, this time of year every team can play, and you can't shy away from them. You have to embrace the moments, and you saw that. I mean, a big play after play with Sarah on both ends of the floor, last play of the game defensively, big threes and scoring when we needed to put the ball in her hands. And then what a fitting way, you know, both being seniors, Shy Sellers' last home game and her four-year career here at Maryland in front of our fans. So I just couldn't be happier, you know, for both of them, for Shy and her journey, and to be able to, you know, lead this team now onto the Sweet 16.
I thought, you know, just watching on television, and I've been in that building when it's been crazy for men's games, but I thought the crowd really, really helped, you know, in the comeback in particular, as you guys started to cut into that lead. How much of a factor was playing that game at home last night?
I mean, huge. That's why you work all season.
Sure.
To be able to have that as sixth man, and they were a massive influence. I mean, they impacted that game. The energy level that we needed to have, especially with the minutes that our players had to play in a 50-minute game. I mean, you know, both Sarah and Allie didn't come off the court, two of your five starters. And, you know, just that additional energy was, you know, huge for us to be able to pull it out. It's the reason why we're top 10 in the attendance every year. And we have the greatest fans in the country.
Yeah, it was a great crowd last night. You know, you mentioned just the minutes. Tibiasu played 50. Kubek played 49 minutes. I mean, it didn't seem like at any moment. I thought Alabama, and I thought in particular Ashley Barker, really started to look a bit exhausted at the end. But for a game that just had the pace to it, and then, you know, the 10 additional minutes of two overtimes, it didn't really look, watching it, like fatigue was a major issue with your team.
well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they didn't show it. I'll say that. I could,
okay,
you know, see the fatigue in Alabama. You know, I thought we were able to use our timeouts wisely when we did see it, you know, coming into play. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they did a phenomenal job, you know, digging deep to be able to, you know, last through the 50 minutes.
Two of the best coaches in the game go at it in the Sweet 16 in Birmingham, Dawn Staley and Brenda Fries. They are the defending champs. You played a great Elite Eight game against them 2 years ago. Talk about the challenge. What do you need to do to pull it off on Friday?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously they present a lot of problems. They are really deep, you know. They go 9 or 10 deep. I mean, their two leading scorers are off the bench, if that tells you anything, out of their rotation. They're always, you know, lead level defenders, get out in transition. They're hard on the glass. They rebound extremely well. But look, every team at this point in this stage of the game, Sweet 16 can play. And so you're going to have to come out, and we're going to have another game as good as this one, you know, in order to to have a chance. And, you know, that's all you can ask for. I know our kids are fired up. They're motivated. They're driven. And we're going to go give it our best shot.
What makes Dawn Staley so successful as a head coach?
Yeah, you know, that level of consistency year in and year out. I mean, she gets her players to buy in. I mean, there's not a lot of programs where your top two scorers would be happy to be coming off the bench. So she finds a way to keep their morale and, you know, through all the, you know, 10 All-Americans she has, she's able to, you know, keep them intact. And that's not an easy thing to do nowadays. And, you know, just does a phenomenal job with her group.
Do you know her well? Who are your close friends in coaching?
Yeah. Dawn and I know each other extremely well, all the way back to her days. You know, we kind of came up at the same era, you know, when we played. But, you know, I mean, you know, closer friends, Tina Langley, you know, was on my staff. She's in the Big Ten now at the University of Washington. Our Big Ten coaches are, you know, a really connected group. Chrissy Curry last night at Alabama. I mean, she's someone from the days when I was at Ball State as a first-time head coach. She was at Purdue and someone I really looked up to and someone who, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking to within the game. So Tricia Cullip at Miami, you could go on and on. But, you know, a lot of great coaches that support one another.
You are certainly one of them. Your run at Maryland's been truly amazing. I'm curious, and I've probably asked you this before in recent years, but how has the current era of NIL and transfer portal been for you? What are the challenges?
A lot of challenges, but, you know, you adapt. I think you can see with the roster that we currently have, you know, Sarah Tibiasu, Sailor Poffenberger, Christina Dulcey, Mir, Amari DeBerry, you know, a lot of players we were able to get out of the portal last year to help us be successful this season. So, you know, it's here to stay. I think our staff has really found what works for us. You know, the portal actually opens today. Great timing, right? When you're
Why
trying to get
that?
Ready for a Sweet 16 game. I wish I knew. You know, it should start after the you know, Final Four finishes. But, you know, I don't make the rules. They don't ask me. And now here we are juggling both. You know, we're not only, you know, getting together today to work on our scout, we're also working through where our calls need to go in the transfer portal. So, the busiest time of the year. But I'm not complaining. I'll get sleep when the season ends and, you know, looking forward to seeing, what lies ahead.
Did you know that this was the first time since you've been at Maryland where both the men and the women have been in the Sweet 16 at the same time?
You know, when they told me that last night, I was really surprised. But then when I thought about it in my 23 years, it made sense. You know, yeah. I mean,
you've been there a lot. It's been the men that haven't held up their end of the bargain.
I'm really happy for the men. I know how hard their staff works, their support staff, their players. You know, you couldn't ask for a greater group. And I'm really, really happy for our university and our state. I mean, such exciting times and the support that we've been given, you know, within our administration and all the way down from the president and the governor, you know, has been to many of our games this year. Our president comes often, so our administration is there at every game. So I can't say enough. It's pretty cool to be able to have on this national stage to, you know, be, you know, one of only four schools that has, I mean, think about that, one of all the 300 plus schools, only one of four schools to have their men's and women's team in the Sweet 16. That's pretty special.
You know, for you, the Sweet 16's become a regular thing, and you've won a national championship. You've been to multiple Final Fours. How do you balance sort of the excitement of last night and advancing to the second weekend, the Sweet 16, especially for players that perhaps are doing it for the first time, how do you balance kind of the excitement of all of that with, hey, guys, this is not the end here. This is just the beginning. The goal is to win the whole thing. Is that a tough thing? Because college sports are interesting. There's a lot of celebration for Sweet 16, for making the Final Four. It's odd that way that college sports, sometimes making the Final Four is as big as winning it all. How do you balance that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a big thing. It's really hard to do. So, you know, of the 300-plus teams, it should be celebrated. And I think you have those moments. You know, last night I took it in with my family as well. You know, I wasn't, you know, going to start scouting until today. You give yourself that moment for our players. They'll get an extra day with their day off today, and we'll worry about it as a staff of the scouting that we've got to get done. But you know, it's easy to get them to lock back in when you get back together, and quick turnaround for us. We leave tomorrow, and you get together and you watch film, and you know, they know what's at stake. So you come down from that high, and you're ready to go do it again.
Brenda Freeze looking to take the Terps to what would be her eighth Elite Eight. If they can pull off the win Friday against the top seed in the Birmingham region, South Carolina. Thanks for doing this, as always. Best of luck on Friday. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much. Go Terps.
Yep, go Terps. Brenda Freeze, everybody. What a run. I mean, Denton. She is at Maryland. 605 wins, 168 losses. All right, so a 783 win percentage. Her record in the Big Ten is 159-34, an 824 win percentage. You know, there were new players. The portal, you know, means you got to coach them up differently each year, a whole new group, and they're back into the Sweet 16, and she's trying to get to her eighth. It would be her eighth Elite Eight at Maryland. Powerhouse program, Hall of Fame coach. And really, when you think about it in our area, and I can only speak to sort of the major sports, somebody will, I mean, I know John Tillman's had a phenomenal run as Maryland's lacrosse coach, and there may be examples of a gymnastics coach or something else at another local school, but locally, professionally, and in college, nobody has had the current amazing run that Brenda's had at Maryland. Nobody in town. Not even close, right? 23 years? That many wins?
Nah,
am I missing somebody?
Of the major sports, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah. All right. We'll do some Denton news when we come back. John Fanta from Fox will join us at 11. Kevin Willard scheduled to join us at 11:25. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. All right, before we get started with Denton's news, just a reminder, John Fanta coming up from Fox Sports, and then Kevin Willard scheduled to join us at 11:25. Robbie Hummel, who was on the call of the Terps game and has been a great analyst all season long, will join us at noon. All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, so we're going to start with some baseball news, Kevin. Opening day coming up at the end of this week in a couple of days. This news, I would say, is both sad and happy. It's sad for me because I'm selfish, but happy for Bob Carpenter. He announced yesterday that 2025 will be his last as the television play-by-play voice for the Nationals, citing that he is going to go home, be a dad, be a grandfather.
Wow. I didn't know that. I really like Bob Carpenter. I like him as a play-by-play voice. He is a very, very nice person. You know, he does not live here in the offseason. I'm pretty sure he lives in Tulsa, of all places. He's spent a lot of time there. I'll reach out to him, see if we can get him on either tomorrow or Thursday. Thursday's opening day, home against the Phillies, 4:05, I think, first pitch. How many years?
I believe this is 20.
Yeah.
So this will be 20. You know, you get that milestone, being able to call games for 20 years in any capacity, let alone for the same team, is a pretty, pretty intense accomplishment.
Bob Carpenter, and he and I have talked about this when I've had him on the show before. I mean, before, you know, he became the play-by-play voice of the Nats for Masson, he was a mainstay doing a lot of different sports, but my first memories of Bob Carpenter calling games were college basketball games in the 80s. Because he did a ton of college hoops games when college hoops was blowing up on ESPN. And there were, you know, games, 3-4 games a night. And he was excellent as a play-by-play calling hoops. And called, you know, a lot of NCAA tournament games over the years before he became primarily a baseball guy. But, we'll certainly miss him and wish him the best in retirement, but we'll try to get him on hopefully before Thursday.
Yeah, this is because he was like the voice of the Nationals from my childhood. So, like, the generation that I'm a part of that, you know, didn't have baseball and then had it, and it was him. We lost Buck a couple of years ago, so now Joe B's the only guy left. So Joe B got to stay around for forever for my nostalgic purposes. But, I mean, I'm happy
for
Bob.
See you later.
It's the perfect
one. All right. What else?
So you mentioned this a little bit at the top, but Juju Watkins, he starred USC, tore ACL last night in their second-round victory, 96-59 over Mississippi State. She's one of the best, if not the best, players in women's college basketball right now. She was also spotted hanging out with Jaden Daniels over the weekend. So unfortunate news, and that really puts a damper on the tournament a little bit when you lose one of the biggest stars in the game.
You know, I saw last night on social media after it happened, because I actually was just watching a lot of stuff last night, and I saw the news break, so I tuned into that thing. They said the play was a dirty play. I didn't see it that way at all. You had somebody guarding her, and you had somebody chasing her down from behind trying to knock the ball out. I did not think that was a dirty play, the play that she got injured on.
No, I'm watching it now. I mean, the defender's literally just guarding the hoop. It's a foul.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. It's a foul, but it's not
dirty. And the second defender is trying to knock the ball out from behind. And then she went down. And there's a reaction, if you've watched this play, from a couple of players who I think they're players at the very end of the bench where – they must have heard something, or maybe it was just her reaction, but it seemed like the end of the bench knew that it was serious the moment it happened.
You know, watching this on replay, it looks like her foot got, I think it's her right ACL, it looks like her right foot kind of got stuck on the court as she was falling.
Right.
So you have it go one way, then snap back the next way.
Yeah. All right.
She's on pace, by the way. She scored more points in the first 2 years than just about anybody, including Caitlin Clark. And I bring Caitlin Clark up because Caitlin Clark is going to be a guest on David Letterman's My Next Guest Is on April 8th on Netflix. That's Letterman's new Netflix show. He did at a point drop like seasons, if you will. I think now he does just dropping episodes. But Caitlin Clark on April 8th will be on David Letterman's show on Netflix.
Okay, I don't think I've watched any of those Letterman things. Maybe I have.
I thought you were a Letterman
guy. Real quickly, back to Juju Watkins. You know, a lot of the players, like, I guess there was an Elite Eight potential matchup with Connecticut, and there still is. Like, Paige Beckers against Juju. She's torn. I think she tore her ACL, and then AZ Fudd, who played at St. John's here locally and was one of the biggest, I think the number one recruit in the country when she signed with UConn. I think she's torn her ACL twice. I think once in high school and once in college. You know, you come back from that. I mean, you know, it's going to be a while. She's certainly not going to play in this tournament. But anyway, all right, what else?
Yeah, you are right, by the way. Paige Beckers did tear ACL. But I think if I remember correctly, we got that matchup last year before we got UConn and Iowa. And we knew that Juju was going to be a star, but she was a freshman. So they squared off, and then UConn won, and they then played Iowa. Iowa won, and they then played South Carolina.
Yeah, Iowa beat LSU to get to the Final Four, where they beat UConn, and then they lost, and really, I think they were overmatched by South Carolina in the final.
Yes.
Do you like my memory of that?
We were all locked in last year.
You know why? Because I have it up in front of me right now.
Oh.
And yes, USC lost to Paige Beckers and UConn in the Elite Eight game. God, there were some heavyweight stars last year, and there are this year.
But
of course, the biggest star that really drew eyeballs to the women's tournament last year is in the WNBA.
Caitlin Clark.
I wonder how that this year's tournament is doing ratings comparison to last year. I bet it's not as good.
Probably not as good, but I bet when it gets at a more, if you'll say central is probably not the right word because central time zone is an actual time zone, but like these USC games, because they're being played at home on the East Coast, start at like 10. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to get eyes on them. Speaking of the women, Maryland won a double overtime thriller, 111-108 against Alabama. We just had Brenda Freeze on. Go listen to that on podcast if you missed it. It was a great conversation. But Maryland is now one of four schools joining Tennessee, Duke, and shockingly, Ole Miss, who I think not many people would have thought would be in this group, as the only four schools that have both the men and women in the Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah. You know, in talking to Brenda about having, you know, a home court advantage, and she earned it by being the four seed. And that's the way the women's tournament has worked for years, is that these first two rounds end up being at the site of, you know, in these sub pods of the highest seeded team. I think the men's tournament should do that. I think that the look, Lexington on Thursday and Saturday, pretty electric atmosphere because Louisville was there, and you know, there's certain venues that really do well, and then there are others that are just utterly, you know, super empty, quiet, just sterile in terms of the environments. Imagine if you had the high, you know, the top four seeds get to host the first two rounds against the other three teams. So, you know, 4 versus 13, a 5 versus 12 game. What else am I missing from that? I forget how those two would clearly. So you would, yeah, it'd be those two games, and then you'd have the game that they had last night, right? So right. Maryland, I don't know who Alabama played in the first round. Maryland played, I think, Norfolk State. I think, because I looked it up before having Brendan on, But though they hosted those two games, Alabama, whoever they beat, and Maryland, Norfolk State, and then Maryland, Alabama. I'd like to see that in the men's tournament.
It'd
I don't think they'll ever do it.
They will never do it. It's so easy for them to do it the way they do it now because you have all the teams in a central location, but then you also get, like, for example, you get John Fanta doing sideline for, you know, six games. You get Robbie Hummel calling six games in a round or eight games, whatever it is, not having to travel. Like, with everything being so spread out, I would wonder how they'd be able to travel all of the elite broadcasters. Because having them all in one, like getting Robbie Hummel for multiple games, is a joy. Same with Fanta. Fanta's fantastic, yeah, on sidelines.
I mean, they do it because it's the way they can draw crowds and keep expenses, you know, to a minimum in the first two rounds. Whereas the men's tournament, they sell out every, I'm pretty sure they sell out pretty much every first and, you know, first weekend venue. And I think Dayton is sold out for the first four each year. All right, John Fanta next. Kevin Willard at 11:25.